Nala 1.3, engine 2, ladder 1, squad 3, medic 211, chief 6, battalion 3, air truck, rescue trailer, delta response, building collapse, 601 Providence Road South, University Village Apartment, apartment 707, city fire jurisdiction, crossroads of Turner Avenue and Stewart Road, timeout 446, KGJ 485, WQSL 552.
Control to you, engine 3, you're on scene. We got a single story, single family. We got a detached garage fully involved in the back. We're going to be stretching a line, get a water supply in the back and front.
Battalion 2's on scene in Silver Command. We got a good fire with a forcible entry problem. We also got a critical exposure to the south. Gonna need help with the first line and an exposure line. Healy's in charge.
Engine 4, 5, 11. Engine 2 for the fast team. Truck 6, 1. Rescue 1, car 1, ALS 1. Delta response. 24 Country Club Drive, Hilltop Apartments, Building 23. For a structure fire. Front Street, TAC 5.
Engine 4 to fire alarm. Got a working fire. Got about a quarter of the building fully engulfed.
Working fire. A quarter of the building fully engulfed.
Mikey, that's a new building in construction.
Yeah, it's the other side, Chief. I'm going to be at the rear of the building, far end. I'm advancing an engine 3 portal line.
Is the building vacant, Mike?
If this is an occupied building, people are still evacuating the building right now.
On your street, in your city, across the country, and around the world. Taking it to the streets is all about fireground leadership and advancing operational excellence on today's demanding fireground. With straightforward street-level talk, with intelligent, stimulating, and provocative insights and dynamic discussion, and interactive dialogue with leading national and international fire service leaders and guests on important issues affecting the American fire service with applications internationally within the tradition and brotherhood of the fire service. So, grab a cup of coffee and sit down for this edition of Buildings on Fires, Taking It to the Streets. And now, here's your host, Christopher Nau.
To this edition of Buildings on Fires Taking to the Streets. I'm Chris Naum. I'm in New York. I'm joined with me tonight for our episode here is Division Chief Mike Richardson from Kentucky. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, Chris. Thanks again for the opportunity and looking forward for some good discussion.
Well, certainly, Mike, it's always the case. You know, We put together our program here sort of on the tail end of a number of things that have been going on, and we got talking a little bit amongst a number of us, and I'm not quite sure if we're going to get all of our potential guests online tonight. Everybody's been pretty challenged with a lot of ongoing issues and so forth that are out there, but a lot of invites for our regular guest, our special guest that you normally have had the opportunity here online with both Battalion Chief Danny Sheridan out of FDNY and Battalion Chief Brian Bassanelli out of Harrisburg Bureau of Fire, Assistant Chief Doug Klein out of Horry County, South Carolina, and Captain Mike Lapina out of Chicagoland. I do have somebody that I already just quickly brought in. I just want to see who we have there out of the northern New Jersey area. Who's our caller in from New Jersey, area code 973?
Chris, that'd be myself, Rick DeGroot.
Hey, Rick, how you doing, buddy? Good to hear you.
I'm doing well.
Well, that is phenomenal. So I'm glad you're on here. Let me get through some of the particulars. So we've got Mike and Mike here. So it's sort of like the Mickey and Mike show, except I'm in the middle of it here. So, well, listen, our listeners, you know, we got talking about doing some things, and certainly January continues. And here we are close to the end of the month. It's January 27th as we're doing our program live. And as we started reflecting on many of the historical issues that many of you have been following on a number of our online social media pages, both our Buildings on Fire for the Fire Service, Buildings on Fire for our Facebook pages, both Rick's, mine, and many others. So, you know, there's a lot of historical events that we're going to touch upon briefly here, but really more importantly, as we talk about some of the issues at hand over the last number of days, what we wanted to do was really take an opportunity to allow our listeners to call in and really have a respectful conversation on the issues affecting us on today's challenging fire ground. I mean, the built environment, construction, there's a lot to be said about a lot of different things. You know, we start off the beginning of this month here in January with the row house fire in the city of Philadelphia on January 5th. Row house fire, three-story brick, end of the row, 12 civilian deaths, nine of which were children. We move forward into the Bronx on January 9th, just a few days later. We have 17 deaths with 44 injuries in a mixed occupancy, fireproof 19-story duplex apartment building with some significant challenges. Many of us, and many of you, our listeners, watched the events unfold, listened to the audio, and then certainly in the days that followed the event, all of the online information that was transpiring. Fast forward a couple of more weeks, the tragic events that occurred in St. Louis as a result of the roof collapse in a two-story brick and joist unoccupied/vacant residential roof collapse that resulted in the line of duty death of firefighter Benjamin Polson with St. Louis Engine Company 13 out of the Hamilton Heights area. And then, again, we go to the events in Baltimore. And certainly when we talk about the continuing issues, three line of duty deaths with Lieutenant Paul Bertram from Ladder 23 and firefighters Kelsey Sadler, who was acting lieutenant and has been posthumously promoted to lieutenant as of today through Chief Niles Ford in Baltimore, and firefighter Kenny Lacayo out of Engine 14. Firefighter John McMaster was released today. He was also involved in the injuries and the subsequent extrication. He has been released and sent home as of today, which is great news, but certainly when we take a look at these events, again, over this month, both from the civilian standpoint, four firefighter line-of-duty deaths, significant injuries across the board on the fire service side, 29 civilian fatalities and injuries, along with, and again, let us not forget, the near-miss events that have been occurring throughout the United States, one that occurred almost simultaneously up in the Pennsylvania area with a floor collapse and a firefighter injury that certainly could have turned much more tragic. But this month, Rick, you know, you and I have been posting quite a bit online on our collective combined pages and so forth. You know, we go back to some of the events, Seattle, the Mary Pang fire with four line of duty deaths back in 1995, all the way to the more current of issues with the Matt Letourneau line of duty death in Philadelphia from 2018, again, in a row house, middle of the row house setting there in Philly, and a number of those events in between. Again, just coming on the heels of Black Sunday of January 23rd, 2005, in the Bronx and in Brooklyn with four line of duty deaths. So before I open it up both to Mike out of Kentucky and Mike out of New Jersey and Pennsylvania there, again, our listeners that are listening to this, to the program live, and I'm getting some pings here from some of you that are out there, along with some individuals that I will leave remaining nameless that are in the Albany, New York area that I would hope will call in here tonight, but are call-in number, again, is 760-454-8852. Please join in the conversation tonight on our Building Some Fire, just talking about some of the challenges in a general standpoint, as well as reflecting and providing some respectful commentary result from the initial events here. So, guys, I'll just open up to either one of you. What's your take on the challenges? I mean, there's been a lot of quarterbacking. There's been a lot of negativity as well as some positiveness. I mean, again, I'm seeing some good things that are popping up about the way the job is in certain worlds, and we have to respect that relative to how departments operate, what they're confronted with, both from the civilian standpoint, and we constantly keep hearing. Again, it's searching for them, going in for them, doing what we do for them, meaning our civilians at hand. Mike, let's start with you. What's your take on some of the getting past the rhetoric? What are the issues affecting our built environment? We've talked about these things at length, but where do you think the disconnect may be, either the strengths or the disconnects that are out there?
Thanks, Chris. I think we've actually got a lot of different fronts and a lot of different issues at play here. If you want to go back to the incidents with the civilian death, I think we have issues related to public education, fire prevention, and making sure that as much as possible we're out talking and working with the community so that if there is a fire event, they hopefully have a plan and are better prepared to react to it, because I hate to say it, I think sometimes we're more than willing to go out and drag hose and throw ladders, but when it comes to fire prevention, public education, we're not maybe all as enthusiastic as we should be. So I think we have that issue. I think we have the issue related to codes and code enforcement. So it could be an issue of both needing to make changes to laws or legislation or regulations, seeing that what's on the books is being enforced. Once again, with the civilian death, we saw issues with doors not being closed that should have been. And we saw issues with potentially how many people are occupying the buildings and whether that should be the case. But also along those lines, I think we need to be aware and recognize we've got a lot of people coming into this country, and they're going to end up somewhere. When we look at some of these incidents, how many individuals are in an apartment or a unit, it's way beyond what we would normally expect. So are we prepared for that? Are we training for that? Or are we out trying to make sure that's not happening if possible? And then I think last but not least is what we all talk about, which is, like you say, the built environment. And are we really taking a good hard look at the buildings that we're getting ready to enter, and do we have a really solid decision-making process as to whether it is a go, it's a no-go, how long we're going to stay in those buildings, or do we just default back to a habit and a routine, which we may get away with for a period of time, but one variable changes and now it's going to go completely different. So I think those are all areas we possibly need to be looking into, talking about, and working on.
Yeah, I agree. Rick, what's your take on some of those commentary, or from your perspective of what you've seen in the metropolitan areas in your backyard? Again, you know, Mike, on some of your commentary, you know, we take a look at the dramatic.
Rick, can you hear me?
Yep, there we go. I can hear you.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. I'm still struggling with this technology.
That's okay. Go ahead. So what's your take on some of the stuff out of your backyard, and both in terms of the events and some of the issues with our continuing challenges with our built environment that's out there?
Yeah, I'm hesitant to make too many comments regarding the two line-of-duty deaths events that involve collapse. The one out in St. Louis, we'll have to wait and see. I like to try to hold back until we get some more reports on the actual facts of what happened. It's very easy to keyboard commander these things. The one in Baltimore is a little bit closer to me because one of my good buddies that I teach with here in Chester County, PA, at the Fire Academy, the lieutenant, it was one of his lieutenants, he's assigned to that truck 23, and it hit him pretty hard. In general, we need to hold back for a little bit and wait till some of the facts come out. From talking to my buddy, I mean, they run that kind of fire almost every day, sometimes multiple times a day, just in his district alone. Of course, you know, all over that city. And you know, it's a real conundrum for us. Is there somebody in there or not? Do we need to go in there or not? There's so many facets that you just can't make a blanket call. I think we need to think about just analyzing each individual incident as it occurs, given the facts that you see upon our arrival.
You know, and that I think is the most succinct, focused, legitimate statement that I think many of us in certain circles promote and advocate exactly that. And that, unfortunately, has a lot of meat to it. And again, I certainly do not want anyone of us or any of our listeners that are out there, we're certainly not Monday morning quarterbacking or being critical at all. I think the point of our discussion here is that when you look at the dramatic extent from a building that is potentially in the appearance of a state of disarray, vacant, ready to fall down, whatever the terminology or whatever that building read is, from that all the way up to a multiple occupancy, 19-story, mid-rise structure. I mean, we are looking at the dramatics from the smallest innocuous building to something of a sizable structure, and we look at what can happen, you know, what relative to the compartment, structural components, and the series of events that may unfold that put us, the fire service, directly in the middle of those crosshairs, as it should be, because that's where we are going, that's what we're doing, whether it be our search, whether it be our suppression activities. But it's important, I think, for many of us to recalibrate, look in real time at our given structures, the buildings, our occupancies on arrival, and initiate a conscientious effort to size up and look at some of those factors that may suggest a particular direction, a particular activity, as Mike talked about, a particular duration of a tactical window. It can't be on auto drive, although in many instances we go into somewhat of an auto drive because of, as you just mentioned, the frequency of these types of events and fires. It does not take much for any of our listeners to do a little bit of research. Whether you talk about Philadelphia, St. Louis, Baltimore, or the Bronx, and you take a look at the frequency of activity, fire ground activity, in any one of these types of structures, whether it be the low rise or whether it be the small stressed structure that may appear not to be occupied but in fact is a place of residence for those individuals. We can even talk about, and again, just it comes to mind here when we talk about the Colorado Street fire in Philadelphia, where Lieutenant Matt Letourneau lost his life in 2018. You know, middle of the row, in a series of structures, some of which were unoccupied or vacant, in use or not in use, but that particular structure certainly had the appearance initially of being occupied. It was noted to be occupied at the time of dispatch, but upon entry, you know, that building had significant structural deficiencies. It was open to the environment and a whole series of events, but that is what the composition is in many urban environments. There's a variety of these types of conditions, and one has to be cognizant of that environment. You know, understanding the operating environment of what that fire ground may mean. But the continuing challenges, I think, are to refine those size-up activities without losing the tactical edge of getting in there to do what's necessary due to the timeliness. And that becomes the struggle. The timeliness of our actions, whether it be putting water in the fire, initiating a primary search, the collectiveness of what an urban environment and urban companies are dealing with each and every day. So, you know, any of our listeners across the United States just has to have a sensitivity of what it is to work in some of these environments. And at the same time, I think we all have to take a step back to try to figure out you know, what can we do to improve upon the challenges that are before any particular company in a particular first due in a battalion or division in any one of the urban to suburban to rural areas around the United States. Before I pose a couple of questions to you guys again here, again, for our listeners, our call-in number, area code 760-454-8852. We are live for our listeners that are out there. John, if you're listening up there in Albany, please give us a holler. I'm going to call you out a little bit more here. I know you're listening because you made the fatal mistake of letting me know that you were online. So I had the good fortune of doing quite a bit of traveling this past week, all the way from Florida to the Midwest, and having the opportunity to spend some time with our brothers and sisters, both in the metropolitan Florida area as a result of the invite from the Florida Fire Chiefs at their Fire Rescue East conference that was convened in Daytona, and then going up to Omaha and doing a couple of programs up there with our good friends in the metropolitan area of Omaha, and especially just a quick shout-out to the Tri-Mutual Aid Firefighters Association in the metropolitan Omaha area for that invite for their training days, which was a free event annually that provides a whole variety of training for the local fire services, both hands-on and classroom activities. But one of the highlights of that event up in Omaha in particular was we did a street tour under some very strenuous conditions, a couple of minus degree temperatures, but we had a cadre of about 25 firefighters, both career and volunteer from both the metropolitan area of Omaha, some BCs right out of the downtown locations, some guys that came up from Lincoln, and we did a walk around. So we did our reading the buildings tour. So it just goes back to this commentary. You know, we have buildings. You can go down a particular block and, you know, building 1, 2, 3, 4, middle of the row, end of the row, around the corner, type 3, type 4, reutilized, reuse, adaptive reuse, all the way to podium construction, new construction. The challenge is out there that we've got such a varying type of structures, both in terms of age, deterioration, occupancy use, and occupancy risk. So the point of this is that even with the variety of experience levels, there's always something new that someone can gain out of understanding this built environment. Even though you might be in your own backyard, which was evident in our dialogue and conversation of getting out into the streets and just giving these guys a different perspective from a guy coming out of New York that's in their own backyard, but sometimes you can't see the forest from the trees. So I'll go back to you guys. You know, because of the consistency in types of fires, because we are working in the environment. In other words, companies are working in their first due, in and out, shift in, shift out, so forth. And I don't want to use the term complacency, but is there something that starts masking the severity level of risk, or does it create this clouding effect of what might be very evident to someone coming in from the outside versus the things that may not be as apparent on the inside? So, Mike, I'll start with you. I mean, especially, I mean, your world, you know, you see this all the time with this variations, and Rick, the same thing for you. What's your take on that? What do you think?
I think it gets back to you have to be careful, and whether, like you said, another consideration would possibly be normalization of deviance. We do something repeatedly over and over. There's no negative consequences, no bad outcomes. So once again, we fall into to a habit or a routine of, hey, this is what we do, and it works, and it will many times. But once again, there just has to be that one variable that changes, and it's not going to work. So as you point out, the key is really being able to read. We talk about, you know, reading the fire conditions, reading the building, reading our personnel, all those things, and, you know, getting into also, if you will, risk versus benefit. But there was some really good research that came out of the UK Fire Service a couple years back, and truth of the matter was that research showed that we have a lot of company officers and incident commanders that fall into habits or routine and they're not making an active decision for each incident. And that's, I think, a huge part of what can get us into trouble, because we can be very successful, do very good things, but once again, it just takes that one thing that, you know, we're either not looking for or somehow we miss, and that's going to be the one that starts the series of events. So, and I'll be honest, in other areas, we may have the opposite problem. We're not making enough fires to build that knowledge or that experience. We talk about using recognition prime decision making. For that to work, you have to have that prior experience to draw from. And all of a sudden, we go from we're fighting fires in single family residential structures to now, like you said, I'm in a high rise, or I'm in a something else that I'm not used to fighting fires in. And now all of a sudden, we don't have that that background to draw from. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the UK studies in particular shed quite a bit of insights on that, coupled with the early studies that were done at Oklahoma State University back in the early 2000s that connected some best practices and actually looked at some of the globalization issues in this normalization of our normalization of both deviance and normalization of these adverse conditions where, again, complacency creep and a number of other attributes comes into play. Rick, what's your take on some of those items, especially when we talk about these history-repeating events? You know, we've seen the robustness of a variety of events across the board this month as we honor these losses of life of firefighters and adverse events with structural collapses, both small and large. We talk about adverse fire conditions with both of the Bronx and on Black Sunday in 2005. We take a look at some of the issues dealing with our Type 4 structures out of the Mary Pang in Seattle in 95, and something as innocuous as a chimney collapse in a line-of-duty death that occurred right here in Syracuse, New York in 1999 with James McGroarty, where, again, the conditions are not always these big to-do things. I mean, they're the subtleties of a small events, or even with Baltimore County from 2011 with Mark Falkenham with dealing with fire dynamics. I mean, we're seeing these constant events occur. Now we have another series of events here with the most recent conditions, some of which have some similarities with our row houses again. And for many of us here, too, you know, I almost forgot to make mention, you know, we talked about row houses back both last year in 2021 and also in 2020 when all of us were participating on the row house series that we did here on the podcast, talking about the challenges, line-of-duty deaths, and a whole course of these other events and conditions and circumstances and learnings. You know, so we had these learnings back from them, and here we are dealing with another series of evolving events. So from the built standpoint, any connect the dots there, Rick, from your perspective?
Yeah, I think what the missing piece of the puzzle, so to speak, is that I think we started to raise an entire generation of young fire officers who haven't been taught how to think critically at an incident upon arrival. I'm afraid that we're seeing a lot of folks just they perform by rote, whatever they did on the last fire, they do the exact same thing instead of critically evaluating all the clues that are out there, you know, the volume of the smoke, the location of the fire, the extent of the fire, before taking action. I mean, there's a big push I've seen on social media, at least, on some individuals, you know, that we always go interior. And to me, that's just an unprofessional and, frankly, unskilled way about going about firefighting. I think we have to get a little more deeper into the science and teach our folks, you know, we're all not going to get to go to all the different fires, but we have to be able to share our collective experience so that you're able to evaluate these critical clues that come along when you pull up on that once-in-a-career fire, and you're the man that's got to make all the decisions in the first 5 minutes. I think a lot of people just fall to what's most comfortable to do, and sometimes that draws us perhaps too deep into the building.
it's interesting. And again, we cannot, you know, experience drives a lot, and experience and the I don't want to say the comfortableness of experience, but experience drives a lot of different things, and both experience and the timeliness of those elements. But the other pieces there of critical thinking, you know, it's worthy of conversation, and I appreciate those two insights. We've got two other listeners that just came in, one out of New Hampshire, and I believe the other out of New York. So I'm going to bring in our New York listener, who is a familiar name to us here in the fire service. So, John, I'll bring you in here. John, come on in for a second.
Hi, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing well. So give a quick introduction of who you are for our listeners here, and what's your take on our conversation here. So a quick little rank and serial number, John, and give us your take on what we're talking about here.
I am John D'Alessandro. I live in upstate New York, Saratoga County. I am the secretary of the Firemen's Association, or as of now, the Firefighters Association of the state of New York. And still an active interior firefighter. Couple of thoughts, all in the context of we all realize that we can do everything perfectly. We can do all the things that you guys have been talking about. Things can still go wrong. But having said that, I think sometimes we get a little too arrogant. Arrogant might be a strong term, but we think we know better than the fire, and unfortunately, I think that sometimes comes with the more experience we get. You know, I've read descriptions of what happened in Baltimore, and you know, they term it as a bread and butter fire. I don't like that term, because that kind of indicates, when you take it apart, that oh, it's just like the last one. And you know, you guys, you gentlemen, that's been a common theme in your comments. So I think we have to get out of that mindset. We have to critically think. We have to treat every fire as an independent fire. I think one of our strengths is our commitment and dedication to want to go into a structure, because we either know or we believe that there might be survivable people in there. But I think once we get in, one of our weaknesses is that we have situational focus and not always situational awareness. You know, we're going in with the mission of hoping to find somebody, and we're not listening and seeing the surroundings, especially when it comes to building construction. You know, in recent years, you know, we train hard and we talk a lot about reading smoke and the neutral plane and, you know, the sort of fire dynamics. But I don't think we give the same level of importance to the structure. You know, in addition to reading smoke, we need to hear the building. We need to see the building. We need to do those things, frankly, you know, in our pre-plans, but certainly once we cross the threshold, they become critically important. And I don't know, you know, when we get that attitude of it's a bread and butter fire, that we necessarily are factoring those things in. And oftentimes when we don't, bad things really happen.
That's a great, great point. You know, I think one common thread here, without even touching upon operational issues, when we talk about building, and I think that's really the emphasis of what we wanted to get into tonight, and we're touching upon that aspect, building performance issues, how the building performs, and the fire conditions that truly are not giving us conventional bread and butter situations. So today's environment, especially when we talk about the rapidness in which fire dynamics is taking hold of a structure and impacting both the civilians, as we saw with the smoke migrations in a building that should not have performed as it did with the Bronx, or we take a look at a row house, as we did in the events there on January 5th with the civilian life loss of life. You know, we have a significant occupancy load in a building that has predominantly a low fire load regarding building and contents, generally speaking, and we don't expect the rapidness in which both smoke is going to develop and migrate, the fire intensity that one's going to encounter, or in some instances as potentially seen or as suggested by both St. Louis and with Baltimore, the rapidness in which the building is going to be affected in such a dramatic way where we end up having not a compromising condition but a catastrophic collapse. So, you know, building performance issues here have a couple of things, and I'll just leave it at this here as a moment because I've got a caller that we're going to bring in from New Hampshire. Is that we have to be aggressive, we have to utilize critical thinking, but at the same time, there are things happening due to fire dynamics and due to building performances based upon characteristics of that building that in an instant of time, in that blink of an eye, in the heartbeat of time, as we are getting engaged to initiate some of those actions, an adverse condition occurs. And both from the fire brigade, fire behavioral standpoint or the collapse. And I too am going to withhold any commentary, as we should. There certainly isn't anything that we should be saying about these operations at all, but it certainly does suggest that as the investigations and lessons come out, will there be a takeaway on evaluating and sizing up or being able to take something away that might help in the conduct of operations when we are initially engaged in a suppression, initial fire attack suppression, and or primary search within that structure to help us gauge other things that may occur. And I think the answer sometimes is yes, and more so in our current environment is that we don't. Because as soon as we start recognizing some things, the dominoes start quickly falling, and we may not be prepared to see them. And I can give case upon case of examples of how that has changed. You know, back in the day, we had the ability to comprehend some things and react. Today's environment is dramatically different where that tactical window is compressed, and we still have to be operating in these environments and, again, trying to fine-tune some elements here to assist our objective, and that is the protection of life, the most significant aspect of what we can do based upon our mission on the fire ground. So we have another caller, and I believe out of the New Hampshire area, area code 815. Who do we have on the line?
815 is me, Chris.
All right. Who might that be?
It's Mike Lapina.
Mike Lapina, 815. What was I thinking here? I'm thinking, are you home or are you somewhere else? Nope. Actually,
no, I'm home.
I'm bad. I'm thinking of something else here, so never mind. I'm thinking New Hampshire for some reason, which was way off base here, but now I'm looking at the numbers, so I had a moment here. So, you know, I need to really quit talking. I'll let you guys do a little more conversation. So I've got Captain Michael Pina out of the Chicagoland area, another good friend and good colleague on our programs here in Buildings on Fire, and certainly doing a fabulous job out in the heartland of America dealing with building construction, and we see our challenges, right? Mike, we've had a conversation recent, which will sort of leave to a certain unofficial standpoint. We won't get into the nuts and bolts of it, but, you know, so join in the conversation. What's your take? We've got a challenging month. We've got all these history repeating events that are out there and lessons and learnings. Are we learning? Are we picking up on some things? Or no matter how, and I'll open all of this to all of you guys, and I'll start with Mike here, but are we ever going to either get a little bit of an edge to try to lessen the potential, or is our world on the fire ground so dramatically changing because of age and deterioration and usages and the civilians at hand, is the job going to always continue to be much more challenging, or is there an educational gap that's out there that some of you have been advocating? So, Mike, I'll start with you, and then we're going to kick it over to Mike Richardson, sort of pick up on what Captain Lapina discusses here as we go forward.
Thing you just hit on, Chris, is the answer is yes. You know, throughout time and history of the fire service, we always seem to be our own worst enemy with certain things, and it takes a while to change because we go through the whole, you know, we all want change, but we hate when things change. And with, you know, the recent events obviously are very tragic, but what I want to look at is that we're at the 40th anniversary of Boulder, Colorado. That was 40 years ago, and sorry, being retired, I sometimes get my days confused. I believe yesterday was the 26th. So 40 years from Boulder, Colorado, and I remember as of even 5 years ago reading things about training academies, they're probably still going on, about training academies and departments that do their own in-house training and everything, violating 1403, and the leaders of those academies circling the wagons and justifying why they are grossly violating 1403 procedures, even though, you know, Milford, Michigan in 1981 and Boulder in 1982 are 40 plus years ago now, and yet we still see either the arrogance or the ignorance, whatever you want to call it. You know, so when it comes to things like, you know, hey, recognizing the changing environment and everything like that, I think overall, I think we need to stop being our own worst enemies, and we need to stop doubling down on the, you tell me I can't use gasoline to train on a live fire. Well, I'm going to put 20 gallons of gasoline on it this time just to, you know, make you cry or whatever. And, you know, and so I don't know. You see these certain elements doubling down on bad behavior when it's called out or when it's identified, or, you know, a NIOSH report comes out and says, hey, you know, take the time to look at a fire ground, take the time to do your size up, take the time to communicate properly, whatever. And you get people that, you know, double down and reinforce bad behavior. And I'm not, you know, I'm saying this just as a generic overall in the fire service, not for any one specific incident, because it seems to perpetuate and keep happening.
You know, I'll ask you this, Mike, because you are certainly have a very strong opinion on this. I think this is a valid statement to make as part of the question, and again, I want to provide transparency. We are not referring to any of the most current events here, but is there an issue dealing with a gap of our fire suppression principles and practices and our knowledge basis of buildings and building construction? Do you think that is contributing to anything in our current generation of firefighters, generically speaking?
Yeah, most certainly. There is a lack of understanding about how buildings are put together and how they're going to behave under fire conditions. And I was just having a conversation with some friends today via text message regarding what appears to me to be a propensity to identify buildings more by occupancy than by building type. In the Chicago area, specifically the Chicago Fire Department, their size-ups have always been based on building construction. So, for example, they will pull up on the scene and say engine company, whatever, on the scene we have a 1.5-story frame, 25 by 40, whatever. They give a very specific building type and description when they arrive on the scene, and when they update, they'll correct it if they find out that it's lightweight or if it's in fact ordinary or it's a brick veneer with wood frame, that whatever. The bottom line is that then you hear people, because again, we've had this conversation before about how little there is as far as building construction and fire behavior in initial training, and certainly follow-up training as well, unless somebody does the training. But it seems like the easy road is just like, you know what, I can't tell if it's frame or ordinary or heavy timber or whatever. I don't know what it is, so, you know, screw it. It's a tire store. Okay, cool. That doesn't tell me anything, you know, as far as, yeah, sure, maybe fire load, but how is that building going to behave? Because a tire store in a lightweight wood frame is a lot different than a tire store in a fire-resistant building. So, you know, just taking the easy road and identifying occupancy, we have a disconnect.
You know, it's interesting, your comment. Again, it goes back to really the premise, and we've actually talked about this on a couple of shows back, or maybe last year. We talk about building construction-based tactics, and that fundamentally is exactly how the fire service over the last, I was going to say last 50 years, but now it's much longer when we go back into the into the 40s, so 60s, it's going back almost 80 years back to the 40s and 50s. Construction-based tactics was all about just the five fundamental building types, an occupancy issue, a little bit on size. So I've got a three-story brick. I got fire on the number two floor of a 50 by 100, and we're going to work. I mean, that is the commonality of many of our size-up considerations and factors, and we just go to work. So, Mike, I want to ask you a question, then I want to go back to John. I'm going to ask you as an individual on the newer side of the job and such a question on what we're talking about. So, Mike, what's your take on these aspects? Again, the gap on the building reads, the gap as it relates to tactics, operations, building type, building occupancy, and the critical thinking components that go into trying to figure that out.
Yes, Chris. I'm going to steal from someone else here, so I'm going to make sure to give credit where credit's due, and that's Gordon Graham. If you haven't listened to Gordon Graham, you've got to make that happen. And his famous saying is, if it's predictable, it's preventable. I'm not really sure that we're seeing a lot of things that aren't predictable because history has shown us that these things can and will happen. So if it is predictable, then it's our job to have to figure out how to prevent it. Gordon also is good about referencing two books. One is The Black Swan, and that basically in a nutshell is, you know, the first time you see a black swan, what is it? You don't know. So I believe there are situations out there that we could run into with changes in construction where it's going to be that black swan. We show up and we haven't seen it. So maybe we really don't know what to do. And I would hope if that's the case, we would slow down, you know, put more time and effort into our size up and our analysis, et cetera. The other one he references is the gray rhino. And that basically in a nutshell is we'd look up and we recognize this gray rhino charging at us. And we should go, hey, this is not a good thing. But we just don't respond to it. And that could be because we're complacent, we're comfortable. That thing's really not going to hurt me. So I think both of those are in play. And talking about professional development, talk about knowledge, skill, ability, and attitude. And to me, all of those can come into play. A lot of times we want to say, hey, do they have the knowledge on building construction? When in reality they may, but then it's really coming down. Do they have the attitude, the proper attitude, you know, to do the things they need to do to make the decisions? Or is it just the default, once again, action? So I think it's kind of some of all the above, but I'll just be honest. I'm not really sure that we're seeing new things that's causing us problems. I think it's a lot of the same old things. But I will get back to, and we've kind of hit on this. We've done a lot of teaching firefighters what to do or what to think, but we haven't taught them how to think. And I can take a firefighter and show them a picture and say, what do you got? And they'll give me a perfect size up and tell me it's a type 3 and all that. And then I'll say, okay, give me your prediction for go, no go, or tell me when you think this building's going to collapse. And then the train comes off the track. Because they really haven't been equipped with a system, and there's different ones out there. But, you know, once again, we have to be able to look at the situation and say, can I enter this building? Will it support our operations? Because it doesn't matter what we want to do or what we think we need to do. If the building's going to collapse and kill us, we can't be successful at our mission. And we have to recognize that initially, but then we also have to have the skill set to recognize, hey, we can no longer stay in this building. I started in the Northeast in Syracuse up there with you. We've got really, really well-built buildings, and we could fight fires in them for days, and they were not going to fall down. But we have to recognize, once again, that's no longer the case in all of our fires. So that would be my comments.
And again, excellent commentary on the referencing and the recommendations for both of those books, as well as Gordon Graham's insights and advocacy. John, you're one of our newer, younger fire service members, just in terms of time and grade in the department. And again, especially with your son being down in Horry County, in the South Carolina metro area of Horry County, Myrtle Beach, what do you think? And again, with stuff out of FASNY and that degree of involvement and so forth, what's your take on, again, our focal point on building instruction from a knowledge and skill standpoint, and then relate that back to some of the things that you're seeing in the metropolitan area of the county and in the Albany capital region? I mean, there's a lot of work, certainly, in terms of fires, both in the cities and in the county and the jurisdictions and the townships around you guys, and you guys see a fair amount of work regarding older structures, and at the same time, too, there is, from what I've seen, some challenges on occupied, unoccupied, vacant structures. So what are some of the things that you're seeing that are working well, some of the knowledge-based issues within that part of New York State?
Well, I certainly do agree that I don't think that we spend enough time teaching young firefighters about building construction. I mean, it's not the most sexy part of the fire service, but as we've seen in the last month, it can be one of the most critical parts of factoring into our actions on the fire ground. So I think we certainly need to do a better job of training young firefighters in understanding not just, you know, construction in the book, but the dynamics of that construction. I also think that as I said before, we tend to get situationally focused. You know, we put a safety officer on the outside, you know, on the fire ground, but do we have a person on the inside whose job is to listen, you know, not, you know, look at the smoke, look at the neutral plane, listen to the building, and not be maybe so directly involved in the operation at hand, but looking at the environment and making that call, or at least advising people who can make that call, that, hey, maybe it's time to get out of this building. It becomes a little more challenging, I think, on the volunteer side, because, you know, unlike a career department where you generally have your brothers and sisters on the crew, you work with them day in and day out, you know people's strengths and weaknesses. On the volunteer side, you never know who's going to be in that truck and ultimately in that structure with you. So it adds another element of, you know, taking your attention away from the dynamics of what's going on in the fire environment with the building to sometimes, unfortunately, being a little more focused on, you know, looking out for the crew. You know, another thing that we face up here, too, is, you know, my fire district is largely a suburban district, you know, Center Hall Colonials, Half Acre Lots. But we do have a couple of villages where we have row houses like the one in Baltimore that we will be called to on a mutual aid call. So, you know, I would say that, you know, we also need to be educated on not just what we think we have in our coverage area, but in the neighboring coverage areas. As I said earlier, we can do everything perfect by the book, but it's the nature of the profession that things often go wrong. We have to stop thinking that the fire ground and the structure is going to do what we want it to do. And I think, you know, we have to realize that it's going to do what it wants to do. Our job is to be one step ahead of it doing it. And that takes, you know, a big part of the conversation tonight, critical thinking, not just book critical thinking, but also intuition. You know, sometimes, we've all been in a situation where, you know, we just know it's time to go, it's time to get out, or it's time to move. And oftentimes we don't listen to that. So, you know, I think we got to become smarter, not just by the book. We got to listen to ourselves and maybe, you know, operationally, you know, change some tactics here.
Some very well put points. You know, you talk about recognizing those conditions out there, and I think we made mention that you may not have that time to once you recognize it, the conditions are set into motion so rapidly that you may not have the ability to react. So it goes back to, you know, taking that deep breath potentially in a certain stage upon direct engagements. You know, at times that first due box, that first due alarm assignment, there are so many different dynamics occurring all in a concurrent standpoint that there's a lot of things, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of very focused activities based upon particular riding positions, the sequence of arrival of the companies and actions that are taking place, especially within the context of very rapidly moving fire conditions, rapidly developing fire conditions, and then concurrently when there are life hazards and risks with those that are either in direct distress or those that are known to be trapped, there's a lot of things that can very quickly be missed, and the focus shifts entirely into a different direction. So, you know, I think one of the advocacies here is that in any environment, however complex, however stressed by a variety of social economical conditions, the physical nature of the environment, the types of buildings, the things that we do with such frequency, or the things that we do with such a great degree of infrequency, they all really demand a certain skill set level, a certain mindset level. I think all of you have conveyed very, very nicely here throughout the program. Rick, you know, I want to ask you about one item here, and again, you get and have the ability to filter out a lot of inquiries that go up on the website or on the group page there on Facebook, and there's always some inquiry, a lot of inquiries, and as I monitor them, certainly, and I know that Mike Richardson, you know, you do the same thing, there's a lot of questions that get asked, some of which are so fundamental and so basic, but the individuals asking the questions have limited to no knowledge of these things, and they're trying to learn. What do you think are a couple of nuggets based upon the types of questions? What perspective does the type of questions that come about, as well as the sometimes the good and the bad responses that are given by others? So, you know, you've got everybody piping in and giving their opinions, good and bad. What are some of the negatives of the opinions being given, and what are the pluses from your observation of the types of inquiries and questions that are being asked when a post goes up on a building, on a fire, on a component, on assembly, some terminology, the things that are all about this built environment that we're all talking about here?
Well, Chris, I am happy to report that probably 90% of the commentary that I get is positive and respectful. When people ask questions, we respect that. Nobody knows all the answers. Now, if any of us are on this line thinking they know everything, that's probably why you wouldn't even be listening tonight if that was the case. But I find one of the things I pride myself with the group page is that we do keep it professional, and people can have their opinions as long as they express them in a respectful manner and support their opinion by fact. Observable facts. Very rarely do I get, in the 14 odd months that we've been monitoring or moderating this experiment, I'll call it, I have yet to actually have to completely block someone or put somebody in, as they call it, Facebook jail for being untoward with a comment. And I think that's a testament to just the overall professionalism of the fire service. When I get a basic question like that, sometimes I PM that particular individual so as not to make it appear as if we're belittling that individual. There's terminology on occasion. I think, Chris, I sent you something just the other day. There was a term that came up, channel rail void, as I recall, and I had no idea what that was. But again, you know, utilizing, you know, the networking power of social media, that's what this is all about, to help spread the word about, you know, certain aspects of building construction that are kind of obscure, but at the same time are necessary for folks to know if they're going to be in a command position.
And I think, you know, it's interesting that the more we get involved, the more we get into conversation, discussion, the more these types of programs are out there. And all of us, again, every single one of you, continue to advocate strongly firefighter safety and our commitment to the public. That again, is first and foremost. But there is always a slightly better way of improvement, you know, either a better way of doing business or the continued improvement of the job, the continued improvement of the trade. I mean, and that's what it's all about. It's being able to be better through either inquiry and learning, continuous learning, or understanding that sometimes we've got to reboot and maybe reprogram our way of thinking. And that comes about through other insights, through a variety of elements. And Mike Lapina, you know, you constantly bring forward this issue about our lessons and learnings from line of duty death reports, and especially with, you know, your ability to go out of the Chicagoland area, which has such an extensive foundation of tradition, into other environments, spread the word, provide some different viewpoints and so forth, while still retaining the essence of what the job is all about. And that, it's challenging at best. I mean, we don't want to necessarily reinvent the world, but at the same time, we do want to reinvent our way of thinking about the built environment. And it really is first and foremost. I mean, the most important element aside from understanding how to get water on a fire is understanding how to read the fire ground, read the building, you know, read the fire, read our companies, understand human performance, putting all these different elements together in a dramatic and dynamic environment. For our listeners, you've been listening in on our Buildings on Fire episode, just a conversation on the built environment coming on the heels of a very dramatic and challenging month of January of 2022. We're in the first 27 days of this month, and again, the number of civilian fatalities, the number of civilian injuries, and again, all of our thoughts and prayers to our brothers and sisters, both in St. Louis and certainly in Baltimore, Maryland. The job is what it is, and our commitment to service to the public that we are sworn to protect in a variety of building types and conditions that to some, again, it certainly highly suggests a certain way of doing business. To many others, it is the way of doing business each and every day that they show up to go to work, show up on shift, and more importantly, turn the wheels to go out on the pad down the road and engage in buildings that, again, have a variety of conditions that are present, fires, smoke, whatever they may be, collapsing conditions and so forth, and our need to certainly verify that those that may potentially or actually be in distress or be trapped are given every opportunity to have continued life through the fire services involvement. That's what it's all about. It's just doing what we do each and every day through the strength of training, commitment, rigor, fortitude, all of those things that make the fire service so great. Well, listen, we're just a little past our 60-minute duration. I wanted to keep our program here pretty concise here. So, again, you know, with all respect, and I certainly thank all of you for maintaining the respect on what we're talking about here, and to those, our listeners, again, if you're not familiar with the events that occurred in the Bronx and in Philadelphia, in St. Louis and in Baltimore, I encourage you to take a look at the right information through a variety of different sources online, gain some insights on what's occurred over the course of this month, or if you're listening to this as a download at some point in the future, and these have been relegated to, you know, to the back burner, which I'm certainly expect not that they will not be, but everything has a tendency to fade to some degree of importance and slide on the scale. I encourage you to read about the firefighters that were involved, who lost their lives in these events, understand the circumstances and the predicaments, understand what, again, the culture of those organizations are, their commitment, and then more importantly, take a look at some of the information that is readily available through our various social media prints with lessons and learnings from the fire ground historically, from all the way from Oakland, California, to Philadelphia, to Boston, to Syracuse, to Chicago, to Seattle, to the Bronx, to back to Baltimore, and again all across the country with significant events that go back in the decades of time that we've been discussing here, many of which, again, resulting from both fire behavior and building performance-related issues from a collapse standpoint, so a lot of history. So I'll start, I'm going to go, actually I'll start with Mike. Any closing comments? Mike Richardson.
Yes, thanks for the opportunity, Chris, and like you said, thoughts and prayers to everyone out there. Final thing I would say is we've had this conversation recently is just make sure that when we are teaching building construction that we're not teaching knowledge just for the sake of knowledge. If we're going to teach someone something about building construction, we have to get into the actual why and the actual application of it. How is that going to help you either at a strategic level or a tactic level on the fire ground? Because we all want more time and we want to teach more, but there are people out there that are arguing that in some cases we're just filling people's heads full of useless information. So I think that's the key is whatever we're going to teach, we make sure we have that real-world tie-in and we allow people to go out and apply it and use it and make a difference. So thanks again.
You're certainly welcome. Mike Lupino, closing comments out of Chicagoland.
Yeah, I'm sorry I was late to the party tonight. We've got the grandkids over tonight, so I missed the first half hour. But certainly, yeah, everything that's happened here in the last couple of weeks, extremely tragic, and someday we'll find out reasons or whatever, and hopefully we'll be able to take anything, lessons learned, if there are lessons to be learned from them, which they usually are in some way, shape, or form, that we're able to make a positive impact on the fire service by something so tragic. But certainly to what John and Mike have said about the building construction stuff, yeah, we have to answer the whys and not just throw out the knowledge, because there's enough of that. Chris, you and I have talked about it before. There's a lot of anecdotal stuff out there that, you know, doesn't just people throwing out terms and words and everything to sound important, but it's like, all right, cool. That's a paper tiger. There's nothing behind it. You know, and helping everybody else to understand and getting them to come and come to the trough and drink and not just look at it, you know. So much out there for us, but yeah, again, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks, Mike. John, closing comments. Number one, I appreciate you calling in. I certainly wasn't meaning to call you out, but you, again, unfortunately made that fatal mistake of letting me know that you were listening in. But look at brother, you know, again, my appreciation. Phenomenal activities and work that FASNY does for the state of New York, as well as for the entire fire service family and system throughout the United States for the volunteers. But again, my appreciation for your efforts and your contributions all the way across the board. So some closing comments from our conversation here this evening.
Well, first, you can't disobey an order from a chief officer, so I had no choice but to call.
You can stop.
You know, certainly thoughts and prayers to the families and the departments that are still suffering and have gone through a horrendous month of unfortunate events. I guess closing thought is that every call is a learning experience, whether it goes well or whether it goes badly, and that we need to look at them in a non-judgmental way, because it develops a body of information, a body of practices for the fire service as a whole. We've got to get out of this old-time mindset of, oh, geez, if I was there, I would have done it this way, or they did it wrong. There's no right way. There's no wrong way, because fire doesn't behave. Structures don't behave the way we want them to. They behave the way they want to. So I think, you know, We need to learn. We need to share that knowledge. You know, we need to realize that we're not indestructible, and that, you know, maybe somebody has got a better idea than we do. You know, I come from a fairly aggressive department, but that doesn't mean it's always the right way to do things. So I think we need to learn from this. I mean, to honor the memories of the people we lost the best thing we can do is learn from it and hopefully do things so that it doesn't happen again.
Very well put. And again, thanks for joining on our program tonight. Rick, closing comments from your standpoint. So again, thanks for joining in, and again, thanks for your continued efforts to provide support to the fire service in our areas of the built environment. So,
well, thank you, Chris. Hey, two thoughts. And those of you that follow my group page know my mantra is get out there and know your local. We have to study our battlefield. We have to do the necessary recon. My pet peeve is I see a fire chief being interviewed after a particularly disastrous fire, and they make the admission that they didn't know that, you know, the building, you know, had, you know, I don't know, lightweight construction or some facet of it that caused the building to come apart and perhaps cause a tragic event. And when you dig into it more deeply, you find out that, you know, maybe that building's been in his local for 20, 30, 50, 100 years in some instances. And we all know that, you know, buildings change over time as well, so you have to be out there. You have to be out in the local. I tell guys all the time, you're out on an EMS run, you're out on a, you know, service call. Use that time productively driving back and forth to the station and go look at some buildings and see what's actually in your district. The other closing words I like everybody is, I'll probably date myself with this, Chris, but in the immortal words of Sergeant Phil Esterhazy from the Hill Street Blues, be careful out there.
You know, some of my best memories hanging around. So our on the volunteer side, our drill nights were on Thursdays, and inevitably we'd finish up and get everything put away by 10 o'clock, getting ready to sit around on the day room watching Hill Street Blues back in the early 80s. So some great words. So thank you very much. And, yeah, we're dating ourselves tremendously. But, you know, again, here with our listeners, respect the sacrifice that is exemplified by the events of St. Louis and the events in Baltimore City. Respect the sacrifice, honor, courage, and fortitude, and again, understand what the job is all about, and that is the protection of life, but then also at the same time, respect that built environment and just understand, again, some of the bits and pieces that we've had a tremendous conversation here tonight. So for my guests, thank you so very, very much for joining in. Great dialogue, great conversation here, which just adds to our archives of podcasts here on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Radio, fireengineering.com, our good friends, Billy, that have been affording us this opportunity, to Bobby Halton, continued support for our programming and for giving us this platform to convey and advocate and support continuing knowledge within the built environment on buildings on fire, taking it to the street. So until next time, companies are in quarters and off the air. Stay safe, but keep in mind, there's a job being worked somewhere in the streets, in your city, across the country, and around the world, doing what we do best and being who we are, and that's firefighters. So take care, everyone. See you on the next edition of Buildings on Fire, taking it to the streets.